Answering your tough financial questions for the past 21 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters with co-hosts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean. Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it is about retirement, investments, taxes, or 401ks, Scott Hanson and Pat McLean would like to help you by answering your call. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you are here, as both myself and my co-host here, we're both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We act as financial advisors during the week, and we act as financial advisors. Maybe act is the wrong term. We are practicing financial advisors.
We are practicing financial advisors
on our program here as well.
We try to help people. It's that simple.
In the area that we're experts.
Yes.
Not in other areas.
Yeah.
We try not to in other areas.
Actually, and we will give you our...
I guess we would be considered expert. We've been doing this long enough.
We will give you our opinion if you ask for it. So, speaking of opinions, my wife and I were cooking dinner I love to cook.
Pat's a good cook.
I really do like to cook.
Although you haven't cooked me in years.
I do like to cook.
At least 10 years.
I enjoy it. I probably cook the meals about probably 70 to 80% of the time at home. So my wife and I were cooking together and I said,
you cook that often?
Oh yeah. Well, yeah, probably three, four nights a week. So, I said, if you want my opinion, I was talking about what knife to use and cutting certain vegetables. I go, if you want my opinion, I would do it like this. And she turned to me and said, absolutely did not ask for your opinion.
Well, okay, you've been married how many years? 30 years?
33 years.
All right.
So my point being to the clients, or if you want to call the show, if you ask our opinion, we will give it to
you. By the way, and if you call the program, we're just assuming you are asking our opinion.
That's right. But if you want to espouse your opinion...
No, don't espouse your opinion. Don't call us to give us your opinion on things. Those calls don't go well.
That's true.
They don't stick on long. But I tell you, we see people every week that got into some sort of a financial predicament, sold them something. They did business with an advisor that had they done some rudimentary background check, they would have seen that the advisor had been disbarred from the business, had all kinds of customer complaints against him or her,
yeah,
et cetera.
The first thing you do is Google the person's name and then the word complaints behind it. See what comes up. And then go to broker check and see what comes up.
Yeah, Google broker check. We also have a thing on our website at HansonMcLean.com where...
It's a tutorial on how to hire an advisor.
Yeah. And feel free to go on to that to learn from that. But the thing about this, you get a second opinion before you do something. And all you got to do is contact us on the program right here during our show and say, here's what I'm thinking of doing. What do you guys think?
Yes.
And you don't have to worry about it. It's not like going and having...
We're not going to sell you anything.
It's
We're just
super
giving
easy.
An opinion. So that's why you call our show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we see people, they make these, it's like, man, I wish you would have called us first. All you got to do is call the program. And if you want to join the program, if you got a question for us, or maybe a second opinion, or maybe your cousin is trying to recommend some financial product and you're wondering if it's the right thing, to join our program, it's 1-888-2-HANSON. 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 888-242-6766, and we'd love to take your calls. We've been doing this program for 24
years.
About 24 years now, and we really do enjoy the calls that come in. So, 888-2-HANSON is the number. We're starting in Sacramento with Lynn. Lynn, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hello, good morning.
Hi, Lynn.
So, good morning. I've been listening to your podcast and actually signed up for a class, but I'm 64 and I'm I need to retire, but I'm kind of waiting because of my age and being right there on the cusp. And I was looking at, you guys were talking about your 401k getting, having to take too much at 71. Is
70
it better to take out of,
70
out of that before you start taking Social Security?
Ooh, depends. It depends. So
first of all, you're only required to take out about 4% at the start, and then it increases from there. So it's not. So even if you had $1 million,
it's $40,000. It's a little less than $40,000 a year.
Oh, I don't have that much.
Okay, so I guess the bigger question is, should I do this technique or this technique? It's what are you trying to accomplish and how do you get there? And then you take all the resources that are available to you and you say, you know, the question you should be asking is, can I retire? And if I can, should I retire? And if I should retire, what are my sources of income and how do I take them to myself? So there's typically 4 to 5 sources of income for a person, right? There's Social Security. There might be a pension, a defined benefit pension or a monthly pension. There's 401k. There's dollars outside that, which are considered normally brokerage or bank accounts. And then sometimes there's outside real estate. And if you're lucky enough, there'll be spousal income and maybe an inheritance in there, right?
No.
And so those are all those sources you should look at. So rather than go right to the tool, which is should I start Social Security or worry about my required minimum distribution, you should be asking yourself is, can I retire? Should I retire? And if I should retire, where do I take the monies from? And that requires financial plan. You could do one yourself. You could go online and you could actually find a financial planning software program and actually calculate it yourself. Or you could go find a qualified advisor that will walk you through that.
It's kind of interesting because my CPA just has joined your firm.
Uh-huh.
So, recently.
Uh-huh.
So,
And so he works in conjunction. There's many firms out there that have tax practices connected to them, although that's not the majority. But your CPA firm that's part of our firm works in conjunction with an advisor in order to put together a plan. That's how it works.
Yes.
So do you go to the advisor or to the CPA?
Well, if you went to the CPA is going to tell you to sit down with an advisor first.
Yeah.
And then what happens is the advisor actually interacts with the CPA if need be on any tax strategy. But by the way,
I'm sorry. Ahead.
Oh, CPAs right now are extremely busy. If you're
I know it's tax season.
Yeah. So
yeah.
So the advisor works with them.
If you're divorced, I was reading one of your emails last night and went into the thing. Can you receive your spouses if they're still living? Your ex-spouse?
Uh huh.
Yes.
Yeah. Depending upon how long you were married to them, and
yes,
and whether it makes
30
sense.
30 years.
Yeah. Yes.
If
it may or may not make sense. Yours might be higher than the Social Security may be higher than the benefits coming from the spouse. So
if you receive theirs, does that go towards receiving and then wait till 70? Does that mean I would maximize mine at 70?
It depends.
Or just you've started to receive it, so.
So
it depends on
when you were born.
And if he's
1954.
She's missed the cutoff for the.
Okay.
There's a lot of moving 66. Parts here, Lynn. So Lynn, you say you're 64. You're contemplating retirement. You've got these things. You're wondering.
I have an autoimmune disease, so it's going to be sooner than later. You know.
Well, then the more important reason to meet with an advisor. Obviously, we are biased. We think we've got a great team of advisors. Mm-hmm. If not our advisor, some independent certified financial planner who specializes in retirement that can help you take all these pieces, these moving parts, and put them all together and say, here's a plan. And here's, we can try to do this option or that option. And
in fact, if you're disabled, I would ask the question, does it make sense to apply for Social Security disability?
That's one of the things I'd look at as well.
I would look at as well. So appreciate the call.
And let's continue. 1-888-2-HANSEN is our number to be part of the program. We're in Ranch Cordova, California, with Kim. Kim, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for joining us.
Sure. Well, my question is this. I am in my 60s, just divorcing.
I'm sorry.
And, well.
She might be happy about it, Scott.
Okay, but nobody plans. I mean, it's a challenging thing to go through, regardless if it's the best thing for her.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, there we go. Well, then.
Yeah. So of course, finances have been a mutual thing. Now I'm going to get a settlement from the retirement account that my husband paid into. And I wanted to know what the tax implications are. You know, what do I need to do with that? I haven't had my own individual retirement account. Mm-hmm. So
how is it being paid out? Is it a pension or is it a lump sum? How is it being paid to you?
Well, this is going to be a lump sum.
Okay. And this is from a company 401k or defined benefit pension plan? Like, did he work for a private company or a municipality or the state? Any of those?
Federal government.
Okay. All right.
So here's how the rules were. And Kim, just for clarity, over the history of your marriage, was he the one primarily responsible for the investments? And maybe you paid the bills?
Yes.
Okay. Very traditional. Yeah. So one of the challenges also with this is now you're suddenly on a crash course of trying to learn about some of these things so you don't make any poor choices. Yeah. So take the investment thing slow and don't invest in anything you can't unwind the next day.
Yeah, correct. So don't go to the bank and where they push you to the guy or the lady in the corner. How long was he employed by the federal government?
Oh, 30 years.
Okay, so are you receiving half of his monthly pension as well as this lump sum?
Not quite half, but yeah.
Okay, yeah. So here's how the retirement plans work. So retirement plans are all held individually, whether it's through an employer like your husband had through the federal government, or if you have an IRA. IRA is an individual retirement account. So most people can't just transfer money between one another, and husband and wife can't transfer the money between one another.
It tracks a Social Security number.
However, when a divorce happens, there's a special provision called a Qualified Domestic Relations Order, or QUADRO. This QUADRO, and here's why it's important for you, in the final divorce
decree, the settlement.
Yeah, the settlement, whatever the court document is, we're not attorneys, that court document is going to specify transfer X dollars or X percentage from his retirement account into Kim's whatever, however it's structured.
Whatever. And the whatever, is really important to you because you want it to be an IRA.
Individual retirement account.
And remember, an IRA is not an investment. It's just a tax bucket. It's a shell. So you're actually going to take this money.
It's not an investment. You can invest in anything from CDs, something very conservative, to penny stocks and anywhere in between.
So you're going to take this money and you're going to establish an IRA and then you're going to say they're going to take the court order and they're going to go to his pension plan, his 401k. Federal government, it's the FERS system. They're going to go and they're going to say, here is the instructions. Move this money into Kim's IRA. There are no tax implications whatsoever in doing that. And you haven't made an investment choice. So don't confuse an IRA with an investment. So that is the first thing you do. The second thing you do is then determine how you want to invest those dollars inside that and whether you want to take a monthly distribution
But that first part needs to be specified in the court filings.
Right.
So the attorney, it's like, here's the name of the IRA. Here's how it gets listed out. And it might just be a check that's distributed, which isn't that not uncommon, and you can just deposit into the account.
Yeah, and it has to be to a previously established IRA?
Yes.
Okay.
You could technically.
Technically, you could just say,
send it to me personally, and then you have 60 days to roll it in.
Or you can state, send it to this IRA, even though you may not have even opened up the account. But the best thing is just to have the account open, and frankly, to have a relationship with probably a good independent financial advisor who can
Someone that you're going to trust. So you've got decisions too about the home, right? I assume you own a home. Who's going to get the home?
Probably went through all that stuff.
Yeah, you're probably there already.
Yeah, yeah. So what's happening is extra from the retirement account is going to be coming to me to cover my part of the equity. And I would like to have
available. So he gets the home and you get the IRA?
Well, part, yeah.
Okay, have you signed all these documents yet?
No, not yet.
Okay, so here's why you need to sit down with someone that actually pretty understands this. If I had a home that was worth $100,000 and I had an IRA.
You wouldn't want to live in it.
Well, if I had a home that was worth $100,000 and I had an IRA that was worth $100,000, they both appear to have the same value. Could we agree on that, Kim?
Yes. Uh-huh.
But they don't have the same value because in order to spend the home, I would sell the home. And
there'd be no capital gain taxes because we can exclude $250 as a single or $500 as a married.
So it's a primary residence. It's gonna there's gonna be a commission to sell the home. We're gonna call it 5%. So this $100,000 home after to convert it to cash is worth $95,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if I had an IRA that was worth $100,000 and I wanted to spend that IRA, I would have to convert it to cash.
IRA or 401k or any other company retirement plan.
When I convert it to cash, I actually have to pay taxes on that. So I have to pay federal taxes and I have to pay state taxes. And depending upon your marginal tax bracket, it's probably going to be worth anywhere from $65,000 to $75,000 in after tax, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we see this often in a divorce where people will actually say, oh, these things are equivalent because they're both $100,000. If you gave up the equity in your home to him and took the IRA in return, you didn't make you didn't make a fair trade. You got hurt in this trade because they're not an equivalent after-tax value.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's the case, then you need to sit down with an advisor before you sign the documents to understand what the after-tax liquidation value of everything you're trading back and forth. And we see this all the time.
I've gone through these numbers with clients over the years. I've gone through with friends.
I've gone through it with attorneys.
Oh, yeah.
Divorce attorneys.
Lots of times.
All the time. So, and when we say to the clients, take the house and let them have the IRA, and they say, well, I'm not representing your ex-husband. I'm representing you. So if it sounds like in this trade, you were taking the IRA and he was getting the house, correct?
Yeah, pretty much.
Then that's a bad trade for you.
Assuming that the dollar amounts are equal.
Yeah, yes. Assuming the dollar amounts are
totally
equal.
Totally agree.
So you need
it might be the right thing for him to take the house, and for you to, that might be the right thing, but he probably needs to have kick over some more money in the retirement plan to make it fair and equal.
Yes, yes, and that is happening.
Okay.
I don't know if it's a proper amount, but that is happening.
Well, you need to run the numbers. You need to run the numbers.
Okay.
Either you or have a CPA or have a certified financial planner.
Someone needs to run the numbers to make sure it's equitable because more times than not, we see this, that it's not done correctly.
Okay.
And then your question was, it's a quadro. I think it was your original question. We went down a path that's often overlooked, though.
Yeah.
And it could mean the difference between 10, 50, 100,000. I mean, we've seen substantial amounts because the tax implications hadn't
now,
been brought.
In all that, did we answer your question?
Well, I think so. You've certainly given me a path to walk, so I appreciate that.
Okay.
All right.
Well, good luck. Yeah. Sorry you're having to go through this. It's emotional.
One of life's things. It happens.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Trying.
It does happen. Yeah. Glad you called, Kim. And it's interesting how she said when life happens, it's one of the things we talk about here at our organization is that financial planning is not... You could do some big financial plan. Okay, the next 25 years, my life's going to look like this. But life happens.
Yeah, life is not linear like a financial plan is.
No. Sometimes there's a divorce or there's a death or something. Kid moves back with their kids into the house for a couple of years. I mean, all kinds of crazy things happen. Life happens. And that's why the right kind of financial plan is one that's fluid that goes through these things. But if you're in a situation where you're facing something similar to Kim, long-term marriage, going through a separation or divorce, the attorneys don't understand the tax laws well enough. They're pretty good at
many of them do, but some
don't as much. It's something to
The kids moving home, Scott. This is my theory. Since my kids were little, I've always been telling them, "You're just a guest here. Don't get too comfortable."
And that's nice. That's how to show love and care. This is part of the family. You're not really part of the family. You're just stuck here. I'm stuck with you.
I'm trying to build.
What's that state where kid can divorce their parents early? Whatever they call it. It's crazy.
Emancipation?
Yeah, there's.
Anyway, so over the next few years, we'll see if my training of my children has turned out okay, that I've told them they're just guests here, not to get too comfortable.
Are any of them over 18 living at the house today?
No. No, I have my senior in high school, but
Okay, then. Well, good for you.
I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, no. Oh.
Life happens.
Who knows, right?
Right? Life happens.
That's why, I guess, you know, they kind of enjoy the day. You never know what tomorrow brings. That's like, that's the con. And it's also an interesting concept when it comes to financial planning, because you're looking at retirement plan. It's like, how much can I afford to spend today? Can I afford to do some of these things that I've kind of always wanted to do, but maybe I've been out of my financial reach, or I've been too frugal over the years to spend the money on them? Can I afford to do them now? What happens if I live to 100 years old?
Yeah,
and I need the money when I'm 92.
It's hard. It's a hard balance.
It's always tricky balances. And again, if you'd like to join us, 1-888-2-HANSEN. Numerically, it's 888-242-6766. We're in Northern California with Patrick. Patrick, you're with Hanson McLean.
Well, good morning, gentlemen. I have a particular question having to do with the current tax rates that we're enjoying out of Washington.
Enjoying? I'd never heard that one, but okay. The enjoyment part.
Yeah. Well, at 24%, which I'm at my marginal rate, it's a lot better than what we're going to see in the future. That's my prediction. So I'm wondering if this might be the opportune time this year, this tax year, and next tax year to make some move with some of the money that's sacked away in a 401k.
It certainly might.
My current cash flow is very good. I'm both my wife and myself are retired state. And so I'm really happy with the monthly income into the future. But I got a chunk of money sitting out in 401s and 457s that at some point in time I'm going to have to draw down from, either at the required minimum or now when the tax rate is lower.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking, I got a small mortgage on my home. Home's about $700,000. I owe about $200,000. And I'm thinking maybe pull out the maximum within that 24% margin and paying off the mortgage with some extra cash.
How much money do you have in your 401k and 457?
Well, the total would be right around $400,000. And then I've got a couple of IRAs, and I got a couple of Roth IRAs as well.
How much do you have in the IRAs?
All totaled about $800,000 on all of the
And how old are you?
Tax. 67.
I like the idea.
What's your family income?
150.
And how much room do you have in the you don't have much room there.
And do you plan on being in California forever?
Yeah, that's a good point. We're making some trips this spring in the RV, and one of the places we're going to visit and consider living is Southern Nevada.
I'd wait.
So if that's a possibility, just in this conversion that I'm talking about this year, I would save $20,000 in state tax.
I would wait.
So, yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking.
I would wait. Because you're right now at a 9.3% marginal rate in California. You hit that with taxable income about $50,000, incidentally, in California. And it can go higher, too, if your income goes higher, depending on how much you end up converting. But
I'd wait. Yep. I don't see the hurry.
Yeah, that's kind of, and the decision would be made later this year. And if we did move, it would probably be next year, 2020. We would still have that 24% that I'm looking at.
That would be the opportune time.
Yeah, and you may actually find that you don't owe anything in a house in Southern Nevada because you had enough equity here to get there, and then you would not pay down the home. You convert to a Roth IRA.
That was another consideration. Certainly, even if I was to do the conversion to pay off the mortgage here in California, this year I might consider doing a Roth conversion next year. Yeah.
Don't convert any this year with you might leave California.
If you're thinking you're going to leave California to a lower tax state, then I'd wait. There's
Unless you want to send Sacramento more of your tax dollars, they do need the money. Incidentally,
they do.
Because the budget surplus wasn't enough.
They do great things with it.
Yeah,
I know.
They do great things.
I'll
tell you, there's no issues. There's no social issues anymore in California. They got the highest tax rate. Uh-huh. There's no homeless. No poverty.
We're building monuments to freeways. We've got one down in Fresno. It crosses. It's right next to Highway 99. It's a monument to light rail system that could have been.
The bullet. Yeah. It was going to be a bullet train. Now it's going to be a light rail. It is a $24 billion light rail.
I see they're going to turn it into a statue. It's not going anywhere. As predicted.
All so right,
appreciate
Patrick.
The call.
Yeah, I like the way you're thinking. Good, just good
okay,
thinking.
Great.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
Well, we need to take a quick break for the bottom of the hour. But when we come back, we'll go in a little more detail about we're hosting some Social Security workshops, 75-minute workshops, free workshops in Sacramento and in Denver this coming week. We're in the Bay Area the following week, but we're going to be going over all different things about Social Security. Many people make poor choices when it comes to Social Security planning. And so we're going to
help you make better choices. And when we say we're in Sacramento, we're in downtown Sacramento, Auburn, Elk Grove, Roseville, and Ranch Cordova. That's the week of March 12th. And
this coming week.
Denver, we're at the Tech Center, Broomfield, Lakewood, and Highlands Ranch.
HansomeMcLean.com. We'll get all the information. HansomeMcLean.com/workshops. We're taking a quick break. Stick around for more Hanson McLean.
Want more of Hanson McLean's Money Matters? Visit HansonMcLean.com/radio to get the Money Matters podcast.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
And before we go back to the calls,
which we will, if you want to join the show, it's 888-242-6766 if you have a financial question for us. 888-2-Hanson. That's 242-6766.
So this was there was an article in on MarketWatch. This was on February 25th. Brett Ahrens wrote this, and if you've been listening to this program for any length of time, or if you've been working with one of our advisors in one of our offices, we've got a team of great certified financial planners and financial advisors.
Or if you have come to one of our workshops in the past, where we oftentimes will talk about Social Security and the decision-making around that.
We believe for the majority of Americans, Social Security will always be there, and there won't be a reduction in benefits.
That's our belief here at Hanson McLean.
Yes. But we believe there is room for concern for those that have done a great job savings. Now, so the Social Security trustees says that the Social Security system is going to be bust by 2034. I've seen some other studies that say a couple years before that. But let's use the Social Security numbers. 2034. That's just 15 years from now.
That's the trustees.
So if you're listening to this and you're 60 years old, this is when you're 75. So in 15 years, the trust fund will be depleted. And without any changes, there'll be a 25% cut in payments across the board.
So who are they going to cut?
But do you think, I don't believe there'll be a cut across the board.
Correct. There'll be a cut. There'll be a cut in Social Security payments.
And this in the article, according to Fed data,
this is the Federal Reserve.
One quarter of the people currently nearing retirement are going to be able to shrug off any cuts at all in Social Security. That's what they say, because there's roughly a quarter of people, the wealthiest 25% in the country, control 83% to 85% of all the balances in the retirement plans.
And they're not dependent
on Social Security
for their financial security.
Like it or not, let's say you've got a couple million bucks saved up in your 401k.
And you did a great job of saving.
Being prudent.
Doing the right thing.
Said, kids, we can't afford Disneyland this year.
Who are they going to take the Social Security benefit away from? Or not give it to in the first place?
It could be those people.
And then you're going to say, stop, you can't do this, I paid into it. And then they're going to say, well, let the voters vote, and you'll see what happens.
Which is why it's so important for you to be armed and in control. That's why we're hosting Social Security workshops this week. You need to understand where you sit in this. So March 12th, this week, beginning March 12th, both in Sacramento and in Denver, you're going to go to HansomeMcLean.com/workshops for all the details. 75-minute presentation. It's totally free. But you need to come. I mean, if you haven't been, you need to go. So if you want to join us on the call, on the program here, 1-888-2-Hanson's the number. We're in Indiana talking with Bill. Bill, you're with Hanson McLean.
Good morning.
Hi, Bill.
How are you guys?
We're wonderful.
What can we
Thanks
do for you,
reaching
Bill?
Out?
So I've got a question about a trust within a will. My wife's father passed away several years ago. He left a will with a marital trust within it. And the trustee is a bank, and my wife's stepmother is the income beneficiary, and my wife is the remainder beneficiary.
Okay.
And my wife has the bank has complete control over this trust and how it's managed, et cetera. I mean, it's defined about how the annual income is distributed, and my wife doesn't get any of it.
Okay.
But the trust, if you will, the money in that trust passes to her when her stepmother, who's still alive, passes away.
That's correct. Okay. Sounds right.
So here's the question, is to establish the basis at the time that her stepmother passes away, my wife will control it. At that point, is the basis established as of her date of death or her father's date of death several years ago?
Father's date of death.
Yes.
Okay.
So we're talking about the bypass trust. So there's probably two, my guess is there's probably two trusts. There is the bypass trust or the B trust, or there's credit provision. There's different names they'll call for them, which was essentially her father's share of the estate is in one trust. And then there's another trust that's the stepmother's trust,
which they might not have anything to do with.
Correct. You may not, right?
I don't think there's two trusts.
Well, you might not be aware of the first trust for the stepmother's.
The stepmom's got her own money.
Well, she may or may not.
Well, the trust within the will is pretty specific. I mean, it's several pages long.
Right. So he had his will, which at his death established this trust that right. was an irrevocable trust that provided some income benefits to his then wife.
Yes.
Right. Not your wife's mother, but another woman.
Right. right?
Not uncommon. Right. And then so he wanted to make sure that his new wife was taken care of. But when she died, he wanted the money to go to his daughter.
So it most likely received a full step up in basis at the father's death. So
the trusted.
So when your daughter inherits this money and she needs to liquidate anything, there may or may not be capital gains.
Odds are, if I were a betting man, there are capital gains from whatever gain took place between.
But we don't know that.
We don't know
because we don't know what's in the trust. So if it's filled with nothing but bonds or treasuries, there may or may not be gains.
Yeah.
In
so the step up basis took place on his death. What's and we're highly confident that there won't be another step-up basis because we're highly confident that that took place. But without seeing the trust document, number one, we're not attorneys, but without even seeing the document, now we're kind of guessing based on
experience. Most situations, the step-up basis is when it is funded into the irrevocable trust. Why do you ask the question?
Well, because we've gotten different opinions on it, and my accountant thinks it's as of the stepmother's date of death. But he hasn't read the will and the trust, but I explained it to him like I did to you.
Bill?
Pardon?
I'm going to ask you a question. How old is the stepmother?
96.
Okay.
And why does this matter? I mean, you can't do anything about it.
Well, when she passes away, though, you know, the question is, do you, as of her date of death, do you get in with this bank and say, you know, we need to... get in there and establish what the basis is as of that date. The bank says that it's as of her father's date.
That's what it would be.
I don't have a lot of confidence in the bank. Well, that's why we're calling you guys.
We answered the same way. But how much money is in the trust?
Significant amount. Okay. I mean, not earth shattering, but significant amount.
Do you know? Does the bank provide some documentation to you?
Yeah. Oh no. Okay. We get monthly reconciliation.
Wow, that's really interesting.
So inside of this, you have to look to see what the holdings are, and you don't necessarily have to have the bank continue to manage it. You can transfer those assets in kind into any account
maybe,
you wish,
depending on how the trust was written.
That's a good point, but it's highly unlikely. It is.
He probably appointed this trustee to take care of my current wife
and her death. Then
money's distributed
forward.
And move on.
But my point being, I think you're borrowing trouble. I don't think you should worry about any of this because there's nothing you can do about it.
Well, until the time comes. He's preparing until the time comes. She's 96.
It makes a difference because if it's as of his date of death, this trust, that money in that trust, is in individual stocks that have been bought and sold since her father died. Uh-huh. I mean, that account gets churned some, not a lot, but some. There's some bonds in there.
They keep track of the cost basis any transactions they've done.
They know that, and
it's probably on a statement.
And your father-in-law gave them the ability to manage the money
and the responsibility
in a fiduciary capacity. My point
they have a responsibility to track.
But my point being is, I like the fact that you're thinking about it. There's nothing. It's like saying I'm worried that the sun's going to go down tonight. There's nothing I can do about it. It's going to go down. Right, I can't change it.
I know that, but the question is, when she passes away, then my wife controls that money.
Yes, and they will provide you at that time what the cost basis is on the individual securities,
and then you'll decide one by one whether it makes sense to sell an individual security or a mutual fund, and what the tax ramifications are at that point in time. But
so has the trust then paid taxes on capital gains or whatever's happened?
Absolutely.
Ongoing.
At trust rates, which they start earlier.
They start.
Yeah, I mean, you're at the maximum rate at 10 or 15 grand a year or something ridiculous. It's
yes. So the whole situation will change. The trust has been paying taxes on it all the way along anytime it recognizes a capital gain and or loss. Through the thing, and then you'll get it, and they'll say, here is the basis on each one of these, and then you'll go through and you'll say, well, it makes sense to keep this or sell that, and Mr. Bank, you probably aren't going to manage this anymore, but I'm going to manage it, or this other firm's going to manage it, and you'll go through that analysis at that point in time and decide how to restructure the portfolio, if at all. But my point being, you have no control over what happens between now and then. So, and you can't do anything about it.
I just want to be sure. You're right. When she passes away, my wife will move that money out of this bank and probably move it somewhere else, Vanguard or wherever.
Yeah, it's pretty normal.
And so I just wanted to be sure that at that point, that statement we're going to get as of that date of her stepmother's date of death is going to, I thought it was going to be more complicated where you had to go back to his date of death. Okay.
Well, they will tell you, they need to track that as well. Yeah. They actually, so what happened is that the father's date of death, they put the new cost basis in at the father's date.
They should have if they didn't.
And
as a trustee.
And it's highly unlikely, that they did not. And then, so at the end of
it. I don't think so. As a trustee, I think they did. That's the kind of thing a trustee needs to do. They weren't just a
yeah, so on that statement, it shows. So what you hope they do is the day before your wife's stepmother dies, they churn the heck out of the whole thing, recognize all the gains, and they give it to you at.
Well, that may not be the greatest. That might not yield the highest net amount. It would make life easiest, that's all.
Would it make sense to sell some of the best performers?
We don't know.
It might make sense to sell it all and start and build a portfolio that makes the most sense.
It may make sense that there's stuff in there that has a low cost basis that you want to hold on to. We don't know. It may make sense that there's stuff in there that has a low cost basis that you move to your own account and then give to a charity.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Or hold until your wife passes away so it then receives the stepped-up basis.
Yes.
Unless they change the law.
Unless your wife keeps it separate property.
Yeah, and kicks you out of the house.
There's lots of things we could worry about. All righty?
No, I know.
All right,
I know.
Bill.
We appreciate
your point is interesting, though. You kind of have to decide whether, you just leave it alone and play it the way you get it.
No, we didn't say that.
We just said
at all.
We said you can't make any decisions until the day she dies, and you know what's right in the portfolio and what the cost basis on each one of them.
And you might choose that, say, you might say, I'm going to get liquidate 80% of the portfolio. I'm going to keep these couple holdings because of two things. One is they're well, three reasons. One is they're good investments. Two, they make sense in my own personal financial plan. And three, the tax implications are too great for me to bother selling. So,
yeah. But we don't know
until that time. So
if you call us the day after your wife's stepmother dies,
it's a little more complicated. You got a whole slew of securities.
We could actually, I don't know if the radio would be the appropriate thing,
that's right.
But
correct. All right, Bill. Hey, glad you called. Those are good questions. And it is the time where people get surprised that they don't have the step up basis. They think, wait, I've heard that about the step up basis. Like, no, that happened 15 years ago. When your father passed away 15 years ago, your mother then inherited the stepped-up basis. It was set in that bypass trust. And this is, a lot of these were back in the situation where it was a current spouse wasn't the mother. That's why it was set up. But there are a lot of these bypass trusts that were created for estate tax purposes for people with very middle-class lifestyles, middle-class
It was $625,000.
$600,000 was the only amount. So, I mean, I think of one client where we took a portion of her, well, I didn't say we because it was part of the planning process, but a portion of her house went to this bypass trust because it received the step-up basis. Then they came along with the $250,000, $500,000 of exclusion.
Which made that thing bad.
Which was a bad call at the time, but it was, you're looking at, well, do I want to tie up my securities that I'm spending my money on or the house that I know I'm going to live in the rest of my life?
So most trusts, as they're written today, actually give the surviving spouse the option of funding the bypass trust,
except for second marriages, or not sometimes even first marriages.
Yeah,
and you still need to be careful because I've seen. I know you've probably witnessed it too, Pat. Where sometimes it's a second marriage, the first spouse set up things with the intention of trying to protect his kids, and you've seen the surviving spouse still do.
Oh, spend down.
Yeah, within the law and within the letter of the, not necessarily in the intent, but within the letter of the trust, and figure out ways to
spend that money.
Spend the money.
Yeah, so you can inadvertently disinherit your own children.
So it's kind of those balance of if you're in a situation where it's a new spouse, and you want to make sure your kids are protected. Think through a lot of these things before you set something up. And now we're in California, 1-888-2 Hanson, talking with Tiffany. Tiffany, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi.
Hi, Tiffany.
Pat and Scott, thank you for taking my call. So I'm 53 years old, single. I have no 401ks or IRAs or retirement pension. I do have a house that I inherited that's worth about $525,000, and there's no debt against it, and currently I'm renting it out. I have a ranch.
And where are you living?
I am living on my ranch.
Oh, okay.
Separate property. And it's worth approximately, like I could walk away with approximately $900,000.
And what do you owe on it?
I don't owe anything.
Okay.
And the initial investment was $75,000. And then I believe I get because I live on the ranch, I get the 250 exclusion from capital gains, correct?
Yeah.
Because I've lived there for
2 years. There's a home,
yeah. Yeah. So I want to sell this ranch within the next number of months or years, within the next 2 years at least. And so I figured out that I would have $325,000 approximately that I could either invest in another personal property or, and then I have about $575,000 that I need to do a 1031 exchange on because I want to avoid capital gains.
Yeah.
So, and I want income producing investment.
Tiffany?
Yes.
You went to a box of tools and you started digging through them, looking to see which one to apply to you. And unfortunately, the 1031 doesn't have anything to do with a primary residence.
But a ranch could be two separate parcels.
But that's not what she said, though. Is it a single parcel that you live on this ranch?
Yeah, and that's separate from the other house that I mentioned earlier.
This ranch
I live
is
on the ranch.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, I thought that I would have at least...
There may be a way she can structure it. I'm not an expert in ranch exchanges.
So, but in this ranch, do you rent out? Do you raise cattle? Is there anything there? Or is this a primary residence and that's it?
I have two rentals on it.
Okay. See, there we go. Now we're getting someplace. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have two rentals and I also do lease it out for cattle.
So it sounds like you have a plan in place. What's your question for us?
Well, my question is, I had four ideas of what I might be able to do, but two of which I think I've nixed. And one of them was the Delaware Statutory Trust. And then the other one was the UPREIT or a 721 exchange. And the other two ideas that I like are buying individual residential houses, and it would be out of California. I'm looking at North Carolina in particular, or potentially an RV park. I've been looking into and studying about that for the last year and a half. And a smaller one about 40 to 60 spaces. And typically, from what I can tell, the cap rate can be 8 to 10%.
You think you can find a cap rate right now at 8 to 10?
Yeah. I mean,
where?
You know, they would have to show financials.
I'm interested.
They're all across the United States. And, yeah. You know, one of the problems is some of the places I wouldn't necessarily want to live, or I don't think I want to. But you know, as you can see, I'm kind of all over the place.
What's your background been? I mean, do you have
a background in real estate, in property finance management, finance? You seem pretty knowledgeable on this stuff.
Well, my grandmother was the first woman in El Dorado County to do a subdivision, and I was with her throughout that whole process. And so real estate's always been a part of my family. And then since, I don't know, I was in my early 30s, I've had rentals. So, okay. So you know, that's kind of...
And do you have a day job that requires a lot of time and resource, or do you have the time you can devote to this sort of thing?
You know, I don't have a day job. I haven't worked for the last year and a half.
The concept of applying your skill set and your labor along with your capital, everything goes well, that's going to produce a much higher return than some passive investment.
Mm-hmm.
Assuming you know what you're doing and you're, you know, prudent at it.
So,
right?
So, and you look at this and you're like, well, if you can get a cap rate at 8 to 10, which I'm very skeptical that that actually exists in this environment.
Well, it all depends on how certain that future income source
that's
is,
correct.
Right? So you can get an 8 to 10.
You can get it for 2 years.
Lease is coming off in 3 months, right?
Or it needs huge capital improvements.
Right.
But you understand all that. You understand
all
that.
Yeah, and I've been looking at more of the simpler RV parks, you know.
I like the idea, frankly.
You know.
I mean, if you were my sister saying, hey, I'm thinking about doing this, and I'd say, yeah, you're going to... Sounds like a great plan.
Yeah. So I like that. Out of the four, the two you nixed, I agree with you.
I wouldn't do anything in a Delaware trust. I mean, sometimes there's all kinds of...
Well, sometimes they name things that
they sound good,
different
yeah.
tax codes. But the last two seem pretty generic to us, and mm-hmm. we like the idea. And generic is normally pretty good.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
You know, well, yeah, I mean, because income producing and avoiding capital gains and, of course, getting a rate of return that's good and having an asset that appreciates are kind of all my four goals.
Yeah, well, so, it may or may not appreciate, but the most important thing is it generates income, current income for
right.
you to live on. And you've already run these numbers by that the ranch actually is qualified for 1031, correct? By an intermediary?
Well, you know, and... First of all, I don't even know where or how I find an intermediary. I do not know about that, but I do know that I need to find one.
Okay,
well, you need to find based upon the plan you're doing and the fact that you say you're going to spend this your own time in this. This is you need to
So the first thing you would need to do is figure out how much of or if any of this ranch is qualified for a 1031.
And then how to go about that.
And then
start with the intermediary.
Because that's the first thing that you know, I'm like, well, I don't know if this even qualifies, but you said there's rentals on the property. So you need to actually start with the intermediary, because that's going to tell you how much of this thing, if any, can move tax-free. That's what I'd start. I'd start there before I started looking at the investments with the proceeds of the dollars. All righty?
Okay. That sounds great.
Okay.
All right. Good luck, Tiffany.
And email me with those cap rates of 8 to 10, as long as they don't need any large capital improvements.
Totally passive.
They're 100% passive, and they're in a zero tax-free state.
Yeah.
Oh, Tennessee. There you go.
There we go. I was recently in Tennessee. I enjoyed it very much.
Yeah. They do have tax.
I don't know what it was. I never asked. So anyway, appreciate the call.
All right. Thanks, Tiffany.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye. Tennessee, every state collects their revenue from somewhere, right?
Yeah.
So we always have to be. You might think real estate's a great investment because they don't have any income taxes there. But if you're a real estate investor, you might care more about what the property taxes are and what's the potential for the increases there.
But the state of Nevada collects their revenue from visitors to the state of Nevada.
And the gamblers.
Gaming. Which actually, listen, it could have a long-term effect on the tax rates in the state of Nevada with the proliferation of the Indian casinos across the United States has absolutely affected the gaming revenues in the state of Nevada.
I wonder, I'm curious.
I know it has in Lake Tahoe.
I wonder, like Vegas, what percentage of the total tax receipts out of that city come from gaming versus hotels and shows and everything? I guess they're all.
Oh, but they're all combined. It's alcohol. It's all combined. It's alcohol. It's gaming. It's residence. Hotel tax.
All right.
Yeah.
I really don't care to know, but it's not Vegas is not my favorite city.
But any state that if you're moving to and it's a zero tax state or a low tax state, you want to know why.
A client of mine moved to Dallas with his family, and his property tax was $50,000 a year.
Oh.
$40,000-some-odd a year. And he had it was a nice house.
I imagine.
But, I mean, a house in, let's say, California where he left would have been, a $4 or $5 million home for that kind of tax bill. His home there was maybe $1 million. But he lived in a neighborhood where they had good schools for his kids. That's just how it works.
So, yes. So you can't.
And I've talked to a number of people. So you got to be careful. But there's also, you can move to districts that. That's a different school district, and your property taxes are much less. That's how a lot of the places work. Anyway, we are out of time. It's been great having you with us. We'll see you at the Social Security workshops this week. Again, HansenMcLean.com to register and for all information. See you later.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.
Scott Hansen here, and I have some exciting news to share, Sacramento. Hansen McLean is changing its name to Allworth Financial. Why? Well, modern retirement has gotten much more complex. I mean, from taxes to estate planning, even the social transition, we decided we needed a name to reflect how we help you plan for all of it. But rest assured, I mean, we're still going to provide advice that's in your best interest, just like we have done for the last 26 years. So to learn more about our name change to Allworth Financial starting April 29th, visit HansenMcLean.com/Allworth.